Hey, we'll call House Education together. Today is March 23rd. We only have one bill in front of us. It's HB 52. The intent is to get the presentation from the sponsor and hear testimony, and we'll set the bill aside for future action, just to give plenty of time for everybody to make sure we got our questions answered, and we have the luxury of not having a whole truckload of bills, so we can do that. Sometimes it goes a little faster. So, would you call the roll, please?
Yes. Representative Seaton.
Here.
Representative Vasquez.
Here.
Representative Colbert. Representative Dummett. Representative Geis-Hanson.
Here.
Representative Tallarico.
Here.
Chair Keller.
Here.
Thank you, Chair. No report.
Okay. So, if the sponsor come forward and identify yourself for the record, and tell us about HB 52.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Bob Heron, Representative, House District 38. Thank you for hearing this bill this morning. This is an enabling legislation. House Bill 52 established statutory authority to set up a matching grant program for museum construction, expansion, and major renovation. It'd be housed in the Department of Commerce. And it's modeled after the matching grant program for libraries that has existed since 2008. The department would write regulations to further detail how the program would work, and we anticipate that the regulations would be very similar to those written for the library program. Alaska is home to more than 60 museums and cultural centers found in 30 communities around the state. They connect our past to our future through stewardship of local material, culture, history, and to educate Alaskans and visitors of all ages. Others will be testifying on this bill, and myself or Susan is here to answer any questions if there are any. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that's the whole presentation, and we'll ask if there's any questions from the committee. It's Monday morning, you know. We've got to
bright and early.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The program that this is mirroring, the one for libraries in the state, did you look at the success or any complications that that program has had, and is that why we're mirroring this for museums to libraries?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, the department is here to answer those kinds of questions, but the museum folks came to me and asked if they could have a matching grant program, and they felt that that was a good model. So if I could have others answer that, if they can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, if there's no further questions from Representative.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Page 2, line 6, the statutory site, AS 14.57.300. I cannot find it. That section title, it's title property held by museum, starts 14.57.200. It ends with the definitions 14.57.290. No, maybe there's something.
And that's why the sponsor brings staff. Identify yourself for the record, please.
Sure. For the record, my name is Susan Phillips. I'm staff to Representative Heron. Representative Vasquez, through the chair, I was getting to the bill. Could you repeat the citation that you have questioned it?
So this is a new section then, right? The 14.57.3. It's adding another section.
Correct.
Okay, correct. Can you explain how this model works for libraries?
Through the chair, Representative Vasquez, I would be happy to do that. I think that's I'll start out, and I would like to defer to the department because they're more familiar with that. This bill was created in 2008. My understanding is that libraries submit applications to the department. There may be some involvement by the Alaska Library Association as well in terms of the submissions and the prioritization. But then the department scores the applications and presents a report to the legislature at the beginning of each legislative session in terms of which projects are ready to go and what their priority status is. And it is up to the legislature how much they fund and which projects they fund.
Give you an opportunity for follow-up, but while you're looking there, we have Catherine Eldemar here from the Division of Community and Regional Affairs. She's here to answer any questions we have. We have Bob, I think it's Banghart. He's a Deputy Director of Library, Archives, and Museums. He's also here for a question here in the room. So then we have several online for testimony. But wait, first of all, follow-up? Okay, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, on the policy issue, because I think the department will probably be addressing the mechanics. As I recall, on the policy issue was that on libraries, what we had was all of the libraries were coming forward and then individual legislators were proposing to fund the libraries in their district. And so the problem became, how do we get those that are ready to go instead of having money appropriated that would sit on the books for a while those came up? And so that program started to have the libraries themselves come forward and vet those projects, see which were closest, at least 35% ready for construction. And so that it kind of took those prioritizations out of just our political process into a more of a process of having the priority of where those would be established by the entire segment of the library community. And so that was something that we did, as I recall, to take the monkey off our back and say which one of these projects is, because the people that were the most knowledgeable about those came with prioritization, so then we could follow that priorities instead of picking and choosing from our own district. So that's just on a policy level as what I recall the library program was. And so I think it's been very effective, but I think we'll have to have others answer that. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Christ Tompkins. By the way, I'm getting it down. Christ Tompkins. I grew up in northern Wisconsin where there's lots of Thompsons, but Tompkins has always been a brain sticker for me. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a question about the fiscal note for DCRA, if and when the time comes.
Oh, you can go ahead and ask it now, and then if the sponsor, the sponsor left, but he'll come back up. Is it for the sponsor or for the department?
DCRA.
Okay, so we will bring him up. Okay, so why don't we do that first then? Why don't we bring Catherine up here before we go to the public testimony? And Representative Culver and Representative Drummond have joined us. And so if you would identify yourself for the record, Catherine, and give us your testimony, or we'll open up for questions.
All right. Good morning. Good morning, committee members and Chair Keller. Thank you for the opportunity to address the Education Committee as it considers HB 52. This is the Museum Construction Grant Program. My name is Catherine Eldemar, and I am the Director for the Division of Community and Regional Affairs. We're commonly referred to as DCRA. Also with me today is Lawrence Blood. He is our Local Government Specialist 5. Just by way of background, DCRA administers over $2 billion in federal, legislative, and state grants. The DCR grant administrators are located in three locations: Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks. Each one of the grant administrators are responsible for administering over 250 grants apiece. Should this House bill become law, DCRA will be responsible for the museum grant program. It might appear on its face that the House bill would not have any fiscal impact on DCRA because there's no grant funding attached to the bill, but that assumption would be a little bit inaccurate. Assuming this bill, in fact, does become law, DCRA foresees the impacts to the division to be similar to those experienced by the library grant program. And the reason why we use that as an estimate is they are two very similar programs. So what happens? Well, DCRA will be required to first create regulations for the museum construction program. The creation of regulations typically takes about a year, and that's due to a number of procedural steps, including public notice requirements. Additionally, communities will submit grant applications for their projects to DCRA for consideration despite the lack of funding. There's an effect, in that community wants to secure their place in a queue for funding when and should it become available in the future. DCRA proceeds with the applications and rates them. The applicants are then notified of the rating of their application from DCRA. However, since there's no funds, we were put in an unusual situation by saying, well, here's your rating, we've reviewed your application, but, and then nothing. So that's what happened in the instance of the libraries. For HB 52, museums may be similarly situated. I brought with me this red binder. I'll show it to you. Here's an example. You talked about what happened when it came to the libraries. So we don't have a little skinny file folder that we have to deal with. These are pretty extensive applications. And our grant applications have to be reviewed by our employees. They have to be maintained, and they have to be rated. And then if they eventually are awarded grant monies, then these files become very extensive. So there is an impact. That is the point of bringing this to you, to show you that we're willing to do the work. We love to do the work. It's just that we're in an unusual situation due to the budget challenges here in the state. We, in fact, are losing a position. If we hadn't lost a position, we probably could have said, okay, zero impact. But the reality is we've lost a position under the budget, and now we really need to look at, if we move forward on this legislation, what are the impacts? So we want to do the work of the legislature. We want to do the work for the people, and this is a great opportunity. We do like House Bill 52. It expands the definition of the museum. It is very exciting. I think there are a lot of people in different communities that would love to see this bill pass, and we support that. We think that the expansion of the definition of museum opens the door for many which were previously closed, and they will get a chance to showcase their wonderful and unique communities. But with most things, it's important that we fund them, and DCRA is happy to support it. We just wanted to have an opportunity to address all of you fine people and let you know that there are needs in the department so that we can fulfill our obligations and do what's necessary. So we're here and available should you have any questions. Thank you, Catherine.
And you say you brought with you is a Lawrence?
Yeah,
if you would identify yourself for the record and give us your full title so we got it there and we know we have you there for quiet answers. Go ahead.
Morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Lawrence Blood, and I am a local government specialist 5 located here in Juneau.
Okay. Representative Christ Tompkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, the questions I had, I think, were touched on by Ms. Eldemar's introduction.
Representative Culver?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. How many staff members administer the library grant program?
How many do we have in total?
Representative Culver, through the chair, we currently have 9 grant administrators. I would say that the grant manager plus 2 additional grant administrators plus other people in the division take part in the scoring and the upfront procedures with administering it. Once it's actually, if it was ever funded, there would probably be 2 grant administrators involved in the administration of the grant program, in addition to the other grant programs that the currently administer as well.
So you have 2 administrators working on library grants, and the rest of the grant administrators help with the evaluations?
Representative Kohler, through the chair. That is correct, but up to this point, we haven't had any grants that have been funded under the Library Expansion Fund. We've scored the applications and submitted those to the legislature. In return, they've been funded under the Legislative Grants to Municipalities Program, which is a different statute, but not under the Magic Grant Program.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up, Representative Culver.
Thank you. So how many grant administrators were reduced in the DCRA budget?
There is one.
Okay. I guess I'll follow up with a comment that for a program that's not funded and it's kind of a pilot program just getting started, so we don't have a lot of inertia in it yet, I don't know why we couldn't multitask. I'd like you to rethink this. This is just kind of a shell until we get funding, that we use the same people and multitask, because this is what state government of the future is going to look like. We're going to have to use what we have. That'd be my thought. Thank you.
Representative Vasquez?
No. Mr. Chairman, I'm fine. Thank you.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you. So the model is the same as the libraries, but the administration and the section where it's in, is, the agency where it's in is different. Is that my understanding?
I'm not sure that I understand the question exactly. Could you rephrase?
I thought I just heard it said that the libraries have never been funded by DCRA, that they're under a different municipalities, and I forget what the designation was. And so I'm trying to figure out why we would separate this from the libraries and have the administration in DCRA instead of under the grant administration that is taking care of libraries.
Okay, so I think I understand the question, so I'll take it in two parts. I'll give you the first answer, and then I'll ask Lawrence to go ahead and fill in the details. My first day was February 23rd, so I apologize for not having all the details, and that's why Lawrence is here. So at the highest level, there are a number of grant administrators in their different communities, and what they do is they gather together, and they don't want to burden any one person with a set with more cumbersome grants than any of their other counterparts. So, for instance, you might have a state grant, you might have a federal grant, and some of these are pretty extensive. So this red line you're here, for instance, this is an example of an application for a library state application. What happens is sometimes you have all nine of these with a caseload, you know, 250 grants, right? We have 365 days in a year. They have 250 grants each. And in that time, they have to assess, they have to monitor, they have to make sure the progress is made and that they're stewards of the money, that it's not being paid out inaccurately. So there's a lot of supervision. And the federal grants are pretty extensive. So you have varying size of grants all within one person. So when they, as Rep. Culver through the chair had said, asked the question, well, can't people kind of take this on? What you have is a full operating system right now. And so we just need a little bit more to accommodate anything else that's brought on. We already have a full plate, and administering the grants, federal, state, and otherwise, is really a full-time job for these individuals. So, like I said, if we had that extra person not disappear on us, this would be a zero fiscal note. But truly, we're speaking candidly. They're handling more than one grant, and they're doing it to the best of their ability and capacity. But did you want to follow up, Lawrence?
Yes, Representative Sand through the chair.
This is Lawrence.
Yeah. This is Lawrence Blood. Again, we do multitask within the division. Outside the grant administrators, I've also sat on the scoring committee for the Library Expansion and Construction Grant Program. So we do draw in expertise from many aspects from the division. The point that I was making earlier is all the work as far as public notification, solicitation, scoring, all happens regardless of whether or not there's any funding made available. In the previous years where we've done the library construction grant program, the legislature has funded the programs that came forward, but they were funded under the legislative grant program, the legislative grants to municipalities, so within the capital budget, and not under the library matching grant program. And I think that was going back to Representative Seaton's talking about the mechanism, trying to have a mechanism to see what projects are ready to go and have those vetted, and then the individual legislators funded those programs to the legislative grants. Does that answer the question?
Follow up.
Thank you. And so under the library program, the grant administration and the responsibility for the scoring of those, although I'm hearing that DCRA participated in that, but that was someone else's responsibility, another agency, or I guess I'm just not clear how I know how the two programs would be similar, but I'm not quite sure how they're different as far as within administration.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, sorry if I wasn't clear. No, it is all handled by our grants section, by our grants administrators. It's just another program. This would be the 12th grant program handled by our grants administrators. So we have 12 different grant programs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vasquez?
Mr. Blood, what are those 12 grant programs?
Yeah, sure.
Representative Vasquez, through the chair, we have the Alaska Climate Change Impact Mitigation Program, the Community Coastal Impact Assistance Program, Community Development Block Grants, Community Mapping Projects, Community Service Block Grants, Chinook Salmon Hatchery Enhancement, Chinook Salmon Mitigation Impact, Designated Legislative Grants, General Obligation Bond Grants, Nutritional Alaska Foods and Schools, and the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska Grant Program. And then the 12th one would be the Museum Construction and Expansion Grant Program.
Okay. Is there umbrella provision, statutory provision, that applies to all of these grants for their administration?
I would, Representative Vasquez, I would have to say yes, there is a relative statutory provision for all of these. I do not have what statutes those would be, but I can follow up and get back to the committee on that.
Yes, if you can do that through the chair.
So the citation on each one.
Yes, thank you. And in particular, I'm interested in an umbrella statutory and regulatory provisions that apply to all of the grant programs administered by the department, if such a creature exists. I'm assuming that may be something. Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
What are the auditing requirements for the state grants?
The auditing requirements is, I would say, falls under the state single audit provisions, where if there's over $500,000 received by an entity, they're required to do a state single audit.
I would imagine, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
I would imagine a lot of these grants fall beneath that level, $500,000. Am I correct? How many fall? Do we know percentage-wise how many fall below $500,000?
Representative Vasquez, to the chair, quite a few of them do fall underneath the $500,000. However, it is a cumulative. It is state funding received. So it's all the programs. So it doesn't necessarily have to just be one grant that is over $500,000 in a year.
Can you clarify that, Mr. Bluff?
Yeah, follow up.
Can you clarify that a little confusing.
Representative Vasquez, to the chair. I'm sorry, I'm not the most versed in the state single audit requirements. However, it's just not one grant. If that entity receives over $500,000 in a year of state funding, they are required to do a state single audit from a CPA firm. It would be an audit that they would be required to engage and submit that to the single audit coordinator with the state of Alaska.
Follow?
So, to determine whether a grant is under 500,000 or over 500,000, you look at a 12-month period? Is that what you're saying?
It would be for the entity's fiscal year. If they received over the $500,000 in different state sources, they would be required to engage an auditor, or otherwise they would not, and it would just be the grant review process that our department has.
What are your regulations? What's your regulatory side for grant approvals and grant oversight?
Representative Vasquez, it depends upon the program, whether it's a legislative grant or one of these other diverse federal or state grants. And of course, the federal grants have their own requirements as well.
I'm interested, Mr. Chair. So you'll provide us with the sites to those audit requirements?
Representative Vasquez, yes, we will.
Okay. And those audit requirements would apply to this, to the museum projects?
Representative Vasquez, to the chair, yes, it would.
Representative Colbert?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With interest, I couldn't write them all down, but you mentioned 12 different grant programs that are administered, and you hit on two of them dealing with Chinook salmon. Could you restate those real quick, and then I can ask a couple questions about them?
Representative Colbert, is it having to do with museums? Because we don't want to get into a discussion.
Okay, I'll get to where I'm going.
Okay.
They sound like to me they're dealing with the what we hope is temporary disaster regarding Chinook salmon returning to interior rivers and various drainages in Alaska. So to offset that, so in effect, we hopefully won't have those on the books as a continuing operation for grants. So I think I see some flexibility within your structure there to do some more work without more people. So, you know, the questions that I would have, and you can send them to me by email, I don't want to bore the committee, how much funding is available for these Chinook grants, and when do they expire, and how much is going out, and when were they established? I'm trying to get, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to get my arms around what the workload is there, and do we really need a new person to administer a program that's not funded? I would like us to see if we could somehow work around this to get this grant program established, not expecting a lot of work to be done on it until we had resources available.
Representative Palmer, that's one of the reasons why we decided not to move the bill today, so you can work with the department and get the answers to all those questions.
Sure, appreciate that.
And that we'll all be doing that independently and then come back, okay?
Mr. Chair, for clarification, if all the answers can go through the chairman.
That'd be a good idea, and then I can make sure everybody gets them.
You bet. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Thanks, yeah. So when you ask your questions, in other words, make sure that
then
in the department will get them back to us, and we'll get them to the chairman.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, if you allow me to, I realize it's a little off. We're not talking museums. We're talking fish or whatnot, but as we restructure departments, I think we need to look for efficiencies. And so any time that I learn a little bit more, I'm diving in a little bit further. So appreciate the latitude.
You bet. No problem. Yeah, we definitely need to do that. So, okay, I think we'll go to public testimony then. Thank you for coming in and answering questions, and we'll be working with you.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Let's go online to Homer. Michelle Miller, are you there?
Good morning.
Good
morning. Thank you for taking testimony on House Bill 52, Chair Keller. My name is Michelle with the Pratt Museum, and I serve on the board of the Museums Alaska Association. And I, like I said, I work at the nationally recognized Pratt Museum here in Homer. It is an anchor institution on the Kenai Peninsula, educating children and adults, contributing to our community's sense of place and identity through history, art, and culture. Like museums all over Alaska, the Pratt contributes to the state's economy through employment and cultural tourism. Thank you to Rep. Heron for sponsorship of House Bill 52, which provides a structure to establish a system for prioritizing museum capital project funding requests in Alaska and follows the state's model for library construction projects. This system is a mechanism to provide equitable access to funding through a competitive grant program and statewide ranking of projects. Even without immediate appropriations into the fund, the mechanism created by House Bill 52 can provide a solid ranking of capital projects and aid in legislative decision-making during the capital budget process. This is currently the case with the library program, which has helped build 14 new libraries through $50 million of awards. This legislation will allow museums to plan to protect valuable collections well into the future. With the passage of this legislation into law, construction projects will be funded by the merits of their projects and prioritized by their ability to match state funding and where they are in the construction process. Again, I thank Representative Heron for his sponsorship of House Bill 52, and thank you to the chair and committee members for your favorable vote to pass the bill out of the Education Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Let's go to Bethany Buckingham Follett, Mosilla.
Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity. I am the curator at the Dorothy Page Museum in Wasilla, Alaska. The Mat-Su is the fastest growing area in the state. Economic development and a healthy community are on the minds of all in our area. The current museum building was built in 1931 as Wasilla's Community Hall. We honor that history and heritage by continuing to offer community programs, including Wednesday nights at the museum, traveling exhibits, and providing a space for visitors to learn about Alaska. Through our programs and exhibits, we infuse history and culture into a learning experience our visitors take with them throughout their lives. Children who come on school tours bring their families and friends back to the museum. You see that connection from their classroom learning to real-world application at the museum. These students then become the teachers when they bring their families and friends back to the museum and show them what they learned and what they know. Visitors come to learn about dock mushing, gold mining, and homesteading, not only of the Mat-Su, but throughout all of Alaska. As we strive to meet the growing needs of our audience, we find we have the opportunity to expand not only our programs, but our space to host those programs. For a community hall built for a town of about 100, we find we are bursting at the seams hosting events for 500 or more. We are in need of more space and updated technology. HB 52 is critical to our museum buildings and programming as we move towards celebrating 150 years of Alaskan history and the future of our communities. We currently host over 700 students a year and are projected to be serving close to 2,100 in 3 years. House Bill 52 is important to our museums and all museums throughout the state. It is an opportunity for Alaskan museums to create a healthy environment for patrons and to learn about their communities and the world around them. HB 52 provides the framework for Alaskans to support our museums and preserve our heritage. Thank you.
Thank you, Bethany. Thank you for your testimony. Eva from Bethel. Eva Malvich.
Hi, good morning. Brianna, for allowing me to speak. My name is Eva Malvich. I am a resident of Bethel, Alaska, Representative Heron's district. I am also the director curator for the UP Bijilalik Museum, a tribally owned and operated museum, which is run by the Association of Village Council Presidents. My message to you, just like last year when HB 333 was introduced in the Education Committee, is that our museums provide service to the pub community, including Bethel. With HB 52, we will be better allowed to maintain our collection of animal hide, gut skin, wood, and ivory objects that are in danger of permanent damage from the lack of humidity control in our museum. Unfortunately, we've already seen damage to our wood, ivory, and gut skin. A shaman's doll uncovered from an excavation in Hooper Bay is cracked. This is the only object of its kind in our collection. The lack of humidity control by HVAC being shut off by our landlord is hurting our collection. We need a means to fix this problem before it's too late. As the only museum in the Delta, our collection of Yupik dolls, masks, grass baskets, hunting implements, clothing, and tools are world-class objects that are easily accessible to the people of this region. Our elders want a museum to teach our future elders about the Yupik culture, and we feel by providing objects close to home, our kids can learn about who we are, how the object was made, and how it was used to help us live in this part of the state for a millennia. I'll use myself as an example. I am the last of a large family of nine. My parents had me in their 40s, and by that time, my grandparents were already gone. I had nobody to teach me how to speak Chupik. I lost out on so many conversations among our elders who were fluent in Chupik. Our oral stories at that time were lost to me. In addition, the Swedish Covenant Church prohibited Chupik dancing and stopped our men and boys from living in the Kazakh, thereby stopping our traditional teaching of young men. I was taught English with Dick and Jane books by non-natives until I moved to Bethel in 1979. For the first time at the age of 10, I entered Yupik class. I felt like an outsider and was ashamed about who I was and where I grew up. Now I am catching up. I am teaching myself Yupik and studying our oral stories. It's not too late. Museums can help people like me. I'm a full-blooded middle-aged Chupik and Yupik mom and a wife who is taking back my heritage through studying our objects in our collection. Just recently, we've offered a seal gut sewing class to the community with Mary Trunuchik of Chupornik. Next week, we are hosting a fishkin class with Karen McIntyre of Bethel, free to the public. In addition, we are planning a Yupik doll making class. So you see, our museum is vital to continuing the traditional means for making clothing and art. We do not need to travel to the Smithsonian downstate to study our objects. We do not need to hire a master artist to teach us how to be Yupik. We have the knowledge and means to sustain our Yupik culture. Guyana, for your time. It is important to keep our Yupik and Chupik artifacts in our region, not in Fairbanks or Juneau. They are too far away. We need them closer to home so that we can continue to learn about our rich Yupik and Chupik culture through studying our artifacts. HB 52 will help me immensely by giving our organization a means for securing funds for construction and renovation of museums and cultural centers. Guyana. So I am done.
Okay, well, thank you for taking time to call in. Appreciate your testimony. Rebecca Polson from Sitka.
Hi. My name is Rebecca Polson. I'm the president of the Alaska Historical Society. I'm in Sitka, where I'm also on the board of the Sitka Maritime Heritage Society. We're running a World War II boat shop as a working maritime museum. And the Sitka Historical Society and Museum here is taking care of our community's treasures. With education, outreach, and visitor services. And I don't have to tell the community that history is important. Education is important. It's important to get accurate history out there and teaching our students to become curious, critical thinkers who value accuracy, respect culture, and can appreciate the lessons of history. The Alaska Historical Society is working to get Alaskans thinking about the upcoming 150th or sesquicentennial of the Alaska Purchase coming up in 2017. 50 years ago, the 1967 centennial left us projects like Sitka Centennial Building, which is still a vital public center, and now getting an upgrade for the next 50. So how can this generation leave a legacy mark the 150th anniversary. Today's museums, as you've heard and as you probably know, are hugely important community centers for history, heritage, education, and visitors. Museums are, you know, in our historical societies, they're grassroots, and they do the work as Ava said, we know our history, culture, education, much better than, you know, an outside organization ever could. And this bill will allow the legislature to leverage, you know, the local support and fundraising that museums do to catalyze lasting projects, and it's a way to leverage vetted, solid, shovel-ready projects in order for this generation to leave a lasting legacy.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Rebecca. We'll go to Patty Relay. Patty, are you online from Valdez?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Identify yourself and go right ahead.
Great. Good morning, committee members and chair. My name is Patricia Relay. I'm the executive director of the Valdez Museum and Historical Archive here in Valdez, Alaska, as well as a member of the Museums Alaska Advocacy Committee. The Valdez Museum and Historical Archives mission is to preserve, present, and interpret the heritage and culture of not only Valdez, but the Copper River Basin and all of Prince William Sound, Alaska. I'm here today to urge you to support and move forward HB 52. With nearly 20,000 visitors to the Valdez Museum each year, the museum is grounded in a strong sense of responsibility to contribute to the not only the region's educational programs, but economic development. We provide opportunities for education and learning. We contribute to the development of our community. We build human capital through building social networks. And we attract tourists to the area, stimulating the economy and creating employment. Now, how do you determine the economic impact of a museum? Well, it takes on a couple of categories. You include the museum's annual operating budget, combine that with the visitor and tourist spending, tax revenue, and local jobs. Now, applying this formula, and I find this a very intriguing number, the Valdez Museum's economic impact on our local economy here is approximately $1.2 million. The educational impact is equally impressive. Last year, our education and public programs served 3,750 people. That's close to the entire population year-round here in Valdez. That means we had school groups coming to the museum and serving at least 2 to 3 times each. That includes public and private schools, outreach to remote areas such as Tetitlik, Kenny Lake, as well as adult learners. What we're very proud to say is that we've become known as a classroom for private and homeschool groups. Now, the Valdez Museum has accomplished a lot within the last few years, incorporating successful expanded ranges of programming, increasing visitation, raising our standards of collections management, which my colleagues have pointed out, it's a big responsibility for all of the local museums to take care of for the public, all of our collections and artifacts. Now, despite these achievements, our institution is now at a point which progress is being hampered by the limitations of space. As a matter of fact, our educational programs have become so successful that we no longer have the space to conduct classes and workshops within the museum. Last summer, as a matter of fact, we used a tent on the front lawn. A tent in Valdez, Alaska, in the front lawn can be challenging with rain, wind, big state logistics, oil rigs zooming down Egan. So anyway, I just really, really would like to encourage you all to think about supporting HB 52. because the Valdez Museum functions as a place of ideas and education. It's a natural gathering place that helps build and strengthen interconnections within family and within the community at large. HB 52, establishing a grant, construction grant program, seems the logical step so that museums throughout the state of Alaska may continue to serve their communities. Help us make this bill a reality. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Patricia. I'm surprised to learn that it rains in Valdez. Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify? I don't believe we have anybody else online. So we'll close public testimony for now, and we'll set the... Did you have another question or a comment there, Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, I think whether it's now or later, but the department, I'd like to find out whether, if there was a delayed effective date, kind of just under committee discussion here, Representative Culver was talking about phase out of what sounded like there may be some temporary grant program. So if the delayed effective date was corresponding with that, then we would have a ability to possibly not proceed until those the people were available to do that. And also, I'd like the department to think about and respond either now or later if the grants could be required to have the administration money tied to the grants, so that if we do legislative grants like we did for libraries, it may be a way in which we don't have to establish those fiscal notes for something until the grant comes forward and incorporates the administration of the grant. So just wanted to kind of get that out on the table, so as we noodle around and think about ways in which I think this would be a very valuable program. I think, you know, we're not looking at grants at any time soon, so that something other committee members can think of other ways in which we might be able to get the benefit of having a system in place without having a fiscal challenge in starting that. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we'll be considering that. And with that, we'll set the bill aside for now. And on Wednesday, we'll have the Board of Regents confirmation hearings this coming Wednesday. So that's the only thing on our calendar at this point. If we get a bill previously heard that we want to bring up, we'll make sure we contact the committee. Representative Vasquez?
I'm sorry.
In looking at the Public Library Construction and Expansion Grant statutory provisions, I'm looking at 14.56.355, Section B. Actually, I'm looking at Section D. D as in dog. I'm just curious. Here it states the department shall establish regulations to implement this section and the eligibility standards under AS 14.56.356. The regulation must include consideration for an establishment of an eligibility priority for an application that is submitted by a community that does not have a public library described in AS 14.56.356. Section A, subsection 2. And I'm just curious, there isn't a similar provision in this bill. Is there a reason for that? You have this provision for the Public Library Construction and Expansion Grant, and so you're using that as a model for museums, and I was just kind of wondering, you know, I was assuming it would be parallel, so to speak, and I'm just wondering if there was a reason why a provision like that wasn't it. I would imagine it doesn't necessarily need to be identical, but why you didn't have a provision like that also applied to museums.
Okay, we'll have HB 52 here in front of us, but now again, because I've set it aside, I'll pull back. But if the sponsor would like to respond, that's a great question.
Hi, again, this is Susan Phillips. I'm an aide to Representative Heron. Representative Vasquez, through the chair, there's no particular reason that was not in the bill. My understanding is that language about a priority being given to a community that does not have a library now
is also in regulation. So it was my thought it could be put into regulation, but I think it's a good idea wherever it is.
Representative Vasquez?
But there's another provision to this section that is, quote, the department shall establish regulations to implement this section and the eligibility standards. Now, there is some language about eligibility, but is this a, I'm just wondering why there isn't a provision enabling the department to further implement the section.
Representative Herron, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I look forward to working with the committee on amending this legislation to address those concerns.
Yeah, and that's what I would have said, is that Representative Vasquez, we work with a sponsor, and if something that needs to be adjusted there, bring it back before the committee, and
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, seeing no other comments, we're going to set the bill aside, and we're adjourned at, is it 8:52?